Hey everyone, Roberto here. Wanted to give you a heads up that today's episode is not up to the quality standards that I usually abide by. For some reason, we could not get our systems to work properly today, and we were dealing with delays over our Skype connection and just a poor quality recording, even though I couldn't really figure out what was causing it. So apologies if today's episode sounds worse than in other occasions. I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year, and we'll be back next year with a better sounding episode than this one. Take care. Bye-bye.
The following previews have been chewed up and spit out by Trailer Clash. Listener discretion is unnecessary.
Welcome back to another episode of Trailer Clash, the movie trailers podcast for the week of December 17th, 2012. This is Trailer Clash episode 77 and the last Trailer Clash of 2012. My name is Roberto Suarez, and with me this evening, please, let's take a glimpse inside the mind of Mr. John Whitford. Hello, John.
Hello. Do you really want to see how far the rabbit hole goes?
I don't think so, no. Let's just pretend. So
but I got tiger blood, so I'm ready for this.
Let's take the magic of a cinema and just pretend and not have to actually go into the reality of John's deep thoughts. So I am noticing a bit of a delay on our connection today. So for our listeners out there, apologies if things sound a little bit off or slow coming on our end. Having some connection problems.
How can they tell if I sound off or not?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I'd rather put it up front.
Off.
Yeah, exactly. So you might not notice anything wrong at all, just because, you know, it's not like the quality of the show is going to be that much more impaired by a little bit of a delay. But if it is, know that we are aware of it. And that there's nothing that we can do about it. So you'll have to bear with us. So anyway, well, this is going to be our last show of 2012. And we're just going to go straight through our trailers here. We don't have a lot to look at. We're probably going to be back sometime in, you know, first or second week of January to pick up in the new year. But I say we get started, John, unless there's anything that you needed to bring up before we got started.
No, I do want to thank, I want to thank Barb for the spectacular job she did with, my movies last week.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Actually, no. She had a lot of fun with it. It sounded like. So I enjoyed listening to her do that show. She had the shows that typically I tend to end up doing. So it was kind of cool. But actually, this week we've got some stuff that I'm looking forward to. So I hold no grudge.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit out of her territory. Then again, she was looking forward to doing the second Star Trek trailer, and that still fell on you. So you never know how it's going to work out. So. All right, well, let's go ahead and get things started with our first film, which is, what is the country of origin of this film? Do we remember? Is it, we should have found out. I want to say it's from...
Bai Shi Chuan Shou was the original title.
So is it a Chinese
China.
Film?
China.
It's a martial arts film. While we... Tell you it is from China. Okay. And it's a martial arts film and it stars Jet Li, who has been known for the martial arts scene for a long time. It's a film titled The Sorcerer and the White Snake, and it opens on February 8th, 2013. It was directed by Xu Tsung Ching. And like I said, it stars Jet Li, Shen Yi Huang, and Raymond Lam. Let's listen to a clip and then we'll talk a little bit more trivia here on The Sorcerer and the White Snake.
In an ancient land, full of angels, demons, and creatures beyond imagination. A holy warrior must confront the ultimate evil, even if it means forsaking one man's chance at eternal love.
Oh, there's always that darn one chance at eternal love that we always have to forsake in order to send back the forces of evil, John.
You know, I always wonder, if something is beyond imagination, how the hell do they imagine it?
In a world beyond your imagination.
We imagine something similar.
Just a black screen. It's beyond imagination. We can't show you because it's beyond imagination. You can't even imagine it. So this movie, I think, is trying to harken to something along the lines of, probably that whole genre of the rebirthed martial arts film that started with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And there's been lots of offerings, you know, hit and miss through the years from that. This for some reason reminded me a little bit of the classic Ray Harryhausen monster movies. The way that the special effects looked in this kind of, you know, made me feel like this was almost Sinbad-like or, whatever, you know, I'm thinking of specifically of the Sinbad movies or of what was that other one that he worked on, the Jack Giant, the Giant Killer, and things of that sort. With the stop motion and whatnot, these creatures, even though they are CGI, seem to me to be kind of inspired by that style. That being said, it's very obvious CGI. I don't know if, you know, this film came out a couple of years ago in China. It's only being released in the States now. And so I'm wondering how much of it is just, you know, the quality of special effects as they have evolved. There were some scenes in particular that could have been straight out of what you would find in TV shows today as far as the quality of the special effects.
I agree. It definitely has that feel to it. But to its credit, it looks like it doesn't try to take itself so ridiculously seriously. So I can buy into the effects not being, you know, top of the line, number one, best right. effects out there. They're not Weta at all. It seems like it fits this really well for some reason. I don't know if it's the really mystical. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know if this is based on any Chinese mythology or anything like that, because it seems like it might have something to do with that. I just don't know anything about Chinese mythology myself. But I found it pretty intriguing. And Jet Li, to me, for some reason, it was unrecognizable in this to an extent. I mean, that's definitely him, but it just didn't have that Jet Li feel.
Yeah, I mean, it had a more of a classic feel. Some of the scenes in it worked for me. Some of the special effects were more jarring. There's one scene where you see like this bat-like demon flying that seemed a little bit jarring. But then some scenes that they had actual fighting going on in really stylized environments, like there's a snow scene where these folks are fighting, and also another scene where it looks like they're on a field of bamboo or something that seemed really interesting. And Jet Li, apparently, he actually got tricked into accepting the role for this film. I was reading on, I think it was in the IMDb page for this, that he was told that this wouldn't be a heavy-duty fighting action movie, and the director promised him it wouldn't be. But then by the time he had signed the contract, he found out after the fact that it was going to be a lot of action, which I guess, you know, Jet Li's probably getting to the point where, you know, he's doing less of that stuff just because, you know, wear and tear on the body and age and all that. And he ended up getting beat the crap out of him because he couldn't land any punch on his co-stars, but all of his co-stars kept landing punches on him. So apparently it was a rather painful experience for Jet Li. My one thing that I was really disappointed when I checked the trailer for this movie is that it was called The Sorcerer and the White Snake and not The Sorcerer and White Snake. I was really looking forward to some 80s hair metal movie in which you have Whitesnake. Wow, exactly. Yeah, Whitesnake fighting a sorcerer. How awesome would that have been?
You should be a scriptwriter. Barb said it before. I'm right there with you.
I mean, and plus,
a
listen,
battle of the bands.
Listen to this. These the Yeah. The title for this movie, at one point it was called The Emperor and the White Snake. At another point it was called Madame White Snake. And then there was a title for it that was It's Love. It's Love sounds a lot like... Is this love? Okay, enough of that. But don't you think? Don't you think it would have been? You know, there's some clues there that lead me to think that Whitesnake was actually originally part of the production of this movie, and they just moved away from that. I'm holding on to that conspiracy theory.
I did the soundtrack.
The soundtrack should include
Ben Whitesnake.
It should include a little Whitesnake. Is what I'm saying.
Absolutely, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, it would be brilliant. It's too bad that they didn't go with that idea.
There was a movie. There was a 1960 movie, Madame Whitesnake.
Ah, so maybe this could have been.
This is related to that. A poisonous white snake is transformed into a beautiful woman by a demon in order to destroy a particularly pure monk who works in the service of the goddess of mercy. Right. So, yeah.
It could be that both of the movies are based
on ironically how the band Whitesnake got their name. Is this
love that I'm all right.
It's a very special end of the year.
All right. So anyway, I think it looks entertaining.
Dipping
I don't know
into
that
the
I
eggnog
would...
over there, Roberto.
What's that?
Dipping into the eggnog a bit much?
We actually had we had whiskey sours at the party I was at last night, so probably dipped a little too much into that. Anyway,
there you go.
Yeah, it seems okay. I did kind of appreciate some of that Harryhausen feel to it. I don't know that it would be something that I would necessarily run out to check out, but had it been The Sorcerer and Whitesnake, you could have counted with me being in the theater. That's what I'm saying. So. Okay, so from Whitesnake to Charlie Sheen. I guess Charlie Sheen probably has some Whitesnake blood as well as tiger blood in his veins. But also opening on the same date, lots of animal blood. On February 8th is a film that looks like it's kind of the most unexpected film, at least, that I have of the lineup today, and probably one of the least expected films. Just overall, because we have seen Charlie Sheen kind of go into a bit of a career. I don't know that you would call it a downward spiral, but this last couple of years, we have seen a lot of Charlie Sheen kind of being in this self-destructive mode, and people kind of writing him off as become a bit of a joke of himself. And now he's in this movie directed by Roman Coppola, who is the son of Francis Ford Coppola. And I don't know, John, did you get a sense watching this trailer? Did it remind you at all of films like by Wes Anderson? Did you get a bit of a sense of something along the lines of the Life Aquatic or something along, you know, something Wes Anderson would have done?
Maybe a little, but it was really, I couldn't follow the timelines. I mean, is this all in his imagination? I couldn't really tell what was going on, but it had a little bit of that. But who did Being John Malkovich?
Yeah, that was Spike Jonze.
See, it for some reason it made me think of that a little bit, and not from the title, of course. Although now that I think about it, the title makes you think of that. But no, it was just something about it gave me a feeling of that.
Yeah, I think Being John Malkovich is another good point of comparison as far as the style of movie it is. The reason I mentioned Wes Anderson is because Roman Coppola, even though this is his first film directing, you know, his first film as the primary director, he's been a second unit director for Wes Anderson in several productions. And the fact that he's sharing some of the typical cast that Wes Anderson has used in the past, both Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray have been featured in several films by Wes Anderson, like Rushmore, for example. You know, I totally could see some influence of that there. And Schwartzman himself is a Coppola. He's a cousin of Roman Coppola, and if I'm not mistaken, he's a son to Talia Shire. So, you know, it's obviously a lot of interconnectedness there. But this film, you know, seems like it could be Definitely an artistic take for Charlie Sheen. I would have never expected seeing him in something like this. It's kind of a bizarre setting. Seems to be kind of outside of time. Maybe stuck like many Wes Anderson films. It kind of has that timeless feel that you don't know if it's taking place in the present or in the past. And it all stems from this character played by Charlie Sheen called Charles Swan III, who seems like some kind of a successful entrepreneur or something, who has lost the love of his life and goes. It's a road movie, really. It's kind of going on a journey to kind of track down what he's missing in his life, and they go into this surreal adventure where things like, you know, Wes Anderson like come to mind. So, and in addition to Charlie Sheen, I mentioned there that both Jason Schwartzman and Bill Murray are featured in this film. So here's a clip from A Glimpse into the Mind of Charles Swan III.
Savages.
I know that you're thinking something terrible.
I've got a whole theory about that. It's on my record.
There is an organization called the SSBB, the Secret Society of Ballbusters.
Get in here now!
Fire!
What the hell was that?
That was pretty close.
Who wants popcorn?
I don't think I have the ability to fall in love again.
You're nuts.
I know I am.
I've been dreaming about you my whole life.
I found this actually very surprised. When I saw that Charlie Sheen was going to be in there, I thought maybe it's going to be kind of a semi-autobiographical thing, given that the name is Charles in the, of the character, and given that the his story, and, you know, thinking, well, what's he going to get into? Maybe he's going to be doing some kind of a self-parody or something like that. But I found this surprisingly entertaining and interesting and kind of sweet in some aspects. I love Bill Murray playing this kind of dry humor character that he's been doing a lot lately. And I love the quirkiness of it. I don't know. It seemed offbeat enough that it would be something that I would be attracted to go check out.
You know what? Yes, I agree to an extent. I don't know if I could handle a movie with him in it, though. He's tainted his career so badly to me, and it does seem a bit like it's Charlie Sheen being Charlie Sheen, being every character he's been for quite a while. And you mentioned the naming of the character. If you look back at the most recent work he's done, of course, the most recent 2.5 Men, he was Charlie Harper in a movie called She Wants Me. He played Charlie. In Anger Management, he played Charlie. In Due Date, he played Charlie. And I think there's at least one more. Spin City, Charlie Crawford. Is he such a bad actor that he can't become another character? They have to call him his real name for him to actually react to the other actors?
Yeah, that's interesting that he's got a... Or maybe it's just a... It could even be a contractual thing or perhaps it's just a matter of identity. People, you know, it's a smart marketing move if you want to identify the character directly with the person, if you're trying to sell the story based on the person, given all the sensationalism around the character. Maybe it's a way to kind of connect it even further. Yeah, I found that rather interesting. I don't know why that would be the case. I don't know. I think I liked it despite the Charlie Sheen stuff. He's been a little bit kind of off the radar. Seems to have been maybe sobered up a little bit. I'm not sure how much, but he's, you know, the silly stuff that came out a few years back with when he left that TV show he was doing, the 2.5 Men show, didn't seem to throw him. You know, I think there were people at that point pretty much calling it career suicide at that point with all the stuff he was doing, and somehow he's kind of, you know, gone past that and managed not only to be in a new TV series, I think that Anger Management series still continues with him, but then, you know, to land a movie with what appears to be overall a fairly prestigious cast, I don't know. I'm curious to see it. I don't know how much of that kind of real life story will permeate through this, and maybe that would be a disadvantage to it. But it would be, there's enough here for me to kind of be interested in that, partly, you know, despite the presence of Charlie Sheen in the film.
Yeah, I agree. It looks interesting enough, and I think Bill Murray has a presence that can carry almost any film, mm-hmm. bad or good. I mean, Zombieland, he was barely in it, but the film was good enough. But you throw him in there, and he took it to the next level completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was the highlight for me of the trailer, is seeing Bill Murray in it. So, our next movie is based on a series of apparently successful books. It's so interesting to me to read about these successful franchises.
It almost like you might as well just say,
yeah, that I have
successful or surprisingly successful.
Yeah, I have no knowledge of them, but apparently they have been selling like hotcakes. So much so that because other book franchises have done successful turns adaptations to film. I'm sure a lot of studios are out there looking for the next Twilight or the next Harry Potter. And speaking of Twilight, there's a lot to kind of credit Twilight in this. Imagine a movie where you have a guy who's in love, person falls in love with another person who has some kind of supernatural connection. And that supernaturalness is what keeps them apart, even though they know they're destined to one another. I could be talking about Twilight and a woman falling in love with vampires, or I could be talking about Beautiful Creatures, which is a man falling in love with a witch, or rather a caster, as they are referred to here in this book. But there's a trilogy, or maybe even four books in the Beautiful series. They start with this first one, Beautiful Creatures. It's directed by Richard La Gravenesse, who has previously given us films like Living Out Loud and P.S. I Love You, fairly forgettable romantic kind of comedies. And it has, like many of these movie franchises, your couple of newcomer young actors in the lead roles, Alice Engler and Viola Davis, and then a couple of seasoned actors in cameo roles like Emma Thompson and Jeremy Irons, hoping to cash in on some of these franchises. Beautiful Creatures is going to be hitting that sweet spot of Valentine's Day weekend right around February 13th.
I like you.
You don't know anything about me.
My family's different.
You a witch?
We prefer the term caster. When I turn 16, my powers will be claimed for either the light or the dark.
You think you can keep Lena so good, so innocent? Wasn't I the same before I was claimed? And look at what I am now.
Huh, what? Oh, is it my turn to talk? I'm sorry, I think I dozed off there for a second. were we talking about a film? I really have nothing to say. This looks god awful. I've said it before with certain films. I'm not the target audience. Mm-hmm. So, man, this just looks wow. I'll have to ask my 16-year-old daughter if she's read the books. I think she recognized the title looking at mm-hmm. it, but I don't know if she's read any of them. But I'd like to think she's at a higher level of intelligence than that. I just offended a lot of people, I think.
No, you know, it does feel very derivative. And the reality is you can clearly see that this is just, let's see what's out there that we can grab onto that will become a franchise and see how it does. And if it's successful, okay, so we can expect two or three more movies in this series. And if it's not, it'll go away like many other ones that have been tried. Like the, what was the one with the dragon? There was one movie with a dragon. I'm spacing
Aragon?
On Aragon. You know, that one was another franchise. They figure Lord of the Rings is doing well. Let's turn this into a movie. It flopped and it went away. They tried it with the Spiderwick Chronicles. They tried it with the Lemony Snicket books. They've tried it with the Percy Jackson books. And then sooner or later, one hits like the Twilight books. That one then becomes a huge hit, right? So it's just keep grabbing them and keep throwing them out there and see what sticks.
So there were two trailers. There was a teaser and a trailer. I watched both. As far mm-hmm. as a trailer isn't efficacy, the teaser was better. This gives away who the bad person is, which I think would have been a bit of a twist.
Correct. The first trailer does not, but the second one does. So the second one definitely brings it into why bother territory, because then it kind of gives away a big plot development that the first trailer avoided to give away. But
Yeah, you know who the big battle is going to be between. So there really is no point.
Yeah. It's kind of a why bother, actually. We haven't done a why bother in a while, so I'm going to give it the why bother.
Why bother?
Thank you, John, for reminding me that we have the power to declare a trailer not worth your time whatsoever. So we've got the power. Yeah. You know what would have been helpful in a trailer for Beautiful Creatures?
Whitesnake.
That would have been helpful. At least throw a little Whitesnake in there, and before you know it, you've got a wonderful, wonderful film. All right. So the next film I thought would be something that would speak to me because it's called Admission, and it is about college admissions, which in my daytime job, when I'm not fighting crime as a podcaster at night, I am an admissions. I work in admissions in a college along with John, who helps out there as an academic advisor. And the title of the movie is Admission. The book it is based on is about a Princeton part-time admissions officer, and kind of it's her autobiographical story of being an admissions counselor in a high-pressure environment such as an Ivy League institution like Princeton. But as I was looking at this trailer, it made me think, you know what? I think they're just maybe establishing the story that's based on this book, but it kind of goes and becomes more about the admissions counselor and her love interests and whatnot, that it actually has anything to do with college admissions. And from there, it just kind of lost my interest. It is directed by Paul Weitz, who did About a Boy, Being Flynn back in 2012, just this past year. And then also what was that franchise? The Meet the Fockers, Meet mm-hmm. the Parents. He did the third one, the Little Fockers movie. And it stars Tina Fey and Paul Rudd, kind of the typical cast of characters that you find in some of the, you know, SNL connected through other films, like anything with Will Ferrell in it. All of a sudden you have Paul Rudd thrown in there and some of these other guys. So it's got Tina Fey and Paul Rudd in it. Also Michael Sheen and Lily Tomlin are coming along in this one. And instead of being what I thought would be kind of an exploration of what it's like to be an admissions officer, it uses that as a springboard for what ends up being kind of another romantic tale involving Tina Fey, pretty much playing Tina Fey in this and her difficulty in finding true love. And of course, I wonder if at some point she will find it. But anyway, here's a clip from Admission.
It's John Pressman
from the New Quest School. I'd like for you to visit our campus.
Can you please email me
and I will call you back?
Hey,
not so rough. How'd you like to have your udder yanked like that?
Excuse me? So let's get to it.
I'm sorry, are you a senior?
No, I'm in sixth grade.
Porsche, this is my son, Nelson. Love you, buddy.
Okay, Dad.
So you're just a single dad traveling the world with his kid, doing good?
I have that on a t-shirt, actually. I'd really like to introduce you to somebody. This is Jeremiah Balakia.
You know, I'm not really your typical student. My brain sort of goes on a little walkabout.
He's a prodigy.
Yeah, so that to me feels like it's the B story. The whole thing about her admitting this kind of not quite your standard Ivy League student. He's going to some alternative school, and even though he may not have the best grades, he's a prodigy, like he says there. And she's going to become the advocate for him. But ultimately, the story's not going to be so much about that as it'll be about the whole quirkiness about Tina Fey being great with college admissions but terrible at relationships. And now she's going to find this, you know, great romantic adventure. It's going to eventually lead her to true love. What do you think, John?
Yeah, it's pretty run-of-the-mill. Although I would probably watch this 100, maybe 1,000 times before watching Heavenly Creatures.
You mean Beautiful Creatures. Heavenly Creatures is actually a pretty darn... It's a great movie. Yeah, yeah. Although, oh, no, yeah, I mean... But there's just... I mean, if you saw Paul Rudd's... He had a movie last year, I think. It was called Wanderlust. It almost looks... There's almost jokes in this trailer that look identical to jokes from that other trailer. Tina Fey is playing the same person she's been playing on her TV show and that she's played in other movies. Just kind of the insecure, I'm not, you know, I've always failed at relationships. And so now this is kind of her redeeming, her redemption of being able to actually find a working relationship. So we're not seeing anything new here from these guys.
No, but you know what? I'm not too burnt out on her. I'm okay with it. If it was on TV and I couldn't sleep, I'd probably watch it. I wouldn't turn it off. It wouldn't disgust me that much. And one of the comments that someone put in IMDb is, seriously, how airbrushed is that poster? Oh my God, you look at the poster for it, and they're right. I mean, she looks completely plastic. Paul Rudd looks about normal, but wow, it's pathetic.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that I find that Tina Fey is funnier in more improvised environments. I find in things that where she's scripted, not as funny. And throughout this trailer, there wasn't anything that made that I could hold on to that would be like, oh, I didn't really laugh at any other stuff that she does. It just seemed like she doesn't work as well when she's scripted. I think she's better. I think the best she's ever been has been in things like in the news segment of SNL, where she was a lot more looser. And even though there may have been some scripted components, she's able to just kind of, you know, say some stuff off the cuff. And in 30 Rock, she tends to also have a little bit more flexibility, even though I'm sure that that's a very scripted show. It does have that kind of improvised style to it that I think serves her better. And you put her in a more restrictive environment of a tight script playing a specific character. And even though it's very much based on kind of the other types of characters that she's done, to me, she just doesn't come through as funny.
No, I agree. The thing that I laughed at with the trailer, and my wife was sitting here and she heard it, and she doesn't usually like children in movies that are like smarter. They more sound like an adult than a child. But his son lying on the couch and she's sneaking out after obviously spending the night with him, and he says, "Are you going to be my new mom?" And she's like, "What?" And he goes, "No, nah, I'm just playing with you." I thought that was funny.
And it came through a bit more genuine than other kids in films that are obviously way too over-scripted and made to sound like real smartasses, which always is a bad sign for me. And then the last new film we're going to look at today is from Michael Bay. But we're not talking about a big budget, or I should say relatively big budget movie a la Transformers or... what's that other one that he did that was huge? The Pearl Harbor movie, or Armageddon. Michael Bay this time around decided to just work with a $25 million budget, just $25 million, and make... poor guy.
How can he work with so little?
I know, and make a smaller film called Pain and Gain. And Pain and Gain is actually based on a true story. Back in 1999... In the Miami New Times, Pete Collins wrote a series of articles that apparently documented the rise and fall of these weightlifters who had tried to kind of coerce some money out of some they got involved in an extortion ring, and apparently those stories are what make the basis now for this film, in which we have Michael Bay directing, Mark Wahlberg and Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. They play a couple of weightlifters who try to extort some money from a club owner, a guy who owns a very successful fitness club. Along the way are also Rebel Wilson, who's been getting a lot of screen time lately, Ed Harris, and Tony Shalhoub. And Pain and Gain is slated for early summer, pre-summer, but definitely spring opening on April 26th. And here's the clip.
What'd you do your time, pal?
Up north.
Are you fixed for a job now?
You just can't kidnap a guy and take his things. That's so illegal.
Sure we can.
Victor Kershaw is a criminal prick who deserves bad stuff to happen to him.
We go through with this. Nobody gets hurt, right?
Oh, man. We snatch him.
There he is!
We grab him. He signs a few signatures. We give him a protein shake. You don't even know what happened. I watched a lot of movies, Paul. I know what I'm doing.
What do you think, John? There was been a lot of negative reaction to this trailer online. I'm wondering what your reaction was.
God, I like both main actors. I do. But nothing grabbed. I didn't care really about the story at all. It just didn't. It didn't intrigue me in one little bit. Nothing about it intrigued me.
Huh. Okay.
It sounds
I found myself pleasantly surprised by this trailer. Maybe my expectation that it was a Michael Bay movie was, had tarnished what I was expecting. And then as I saw it, I was like, oh man, this looks kind of fun. It seemed along the vibe of a movie that the Coen brothers did a few years back called Burn After Reading, in which there's kind of a similar thing in that one. These guys work in a fitness club. And I think it looks like a former CIA agent drops off a suitcase, or I think it was his wallet, and then they find it and they try to extort information, threatening that they're going to reveal the stuff that they have found. So in that sense, a kind of dark comedy part of it kind of appealed to me. But most of the reaction that I read was very negative for this. People thinking that it looked just weak and that the characterizations were terrible. I don't know. I was kind of pleasantly surprised by it. And I thought that both Mark Wahlberg and The Rock are perfect for these kinds of roles. But I do agree with you. I think it's hard to empathize with any of these characters, because I think we know from the get-go that they're all bad guys, right? I mean, even the heroes of our movie, they set them up already on the film for you to know in the trailer that they're extorting money out of some bad guy. And granted, they're probably extorting money from a worse guy than they are, but still, it's pretty evident that these guys are gonna get everything they deserve.
Yeah, I like both actors. I do. I don't know. It could be one of those surprising things. This might have more story to it than it seems. But and I like Ed Harris too. I think he could be okay in here. But I don't know.
Yeah,
it looks boring.
All right. Okay. Different reaction from mine. I actually thought it looked rather entertaining.
Okay. I want a movie to take me out of this world
and into the mind of Charlie Sheen. All right, let's finish things off.
It's
here
so scary.
With something that we promised you a couple of weeks ago, and that was that after the teaser or the announcement trailer to Star Trek Into Darkness, that it would be an actual full trailer coming out on December 17th, and it did. So to close things off, let's do another Don't Tease Me.
Don't tease me, bro!
Of Star Trek Into Darkness, as we know, directed by J.J. Abrams, starring Chris Pine as Captain Kirk and Zachary Quinto as Spock. We have confirmed that Alice Eve's character is Carol Marcus, which further creates connections with Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, because that was the character of Kirk's, I want to say love interest, but definitely there had been a romantic relationship in the past between Kirk and Carol Marcus in Star Trek II. And then there's all sorts of speculation continuing around Benedict Cumberbatch's a character of the Nemesis. The name that's been published out there is that his character's name is John Harrison, but nobody seems to know what exactly that means. Is that just a red herring? There have been characters in Star Trek lore with similar names. Could it be that character? We don't know. Maybe this trailer really, unfortunately, does not give us more to go with. But here's the clip from the latest trailer to Star Trek Into Darkness, which opens on May 17th.
There's greatness in you, but there's not an ounce of humility. You think that you can't make mistakes, but there's gonna come a moment when you realize you're wrong about that. And you're gonna get yourself and everyone under your command killed.
So I appreciated getting that aspect of the trailer in there. Kind of the Kirk having to kind of question maybe his more maverick ways and realizing that if he's only thinking about himself, that he's putting everybody else at risk that he is responsible for. However, I can't help but think overall of this trailer as a case of less is more, where I felt that this whole stunt of doing an announcement trailer that came out a couple of weeks prior to then have this one come out, this to me overall didn't add that much, and I think it would have been better served to market this movie just with the original trailer or just with this trailer and not have this silly, you know, watch out for the new trailer coming out up in a couple of weeks. To me, it seemed unnecessary. And honestly, I don't think it had the impact to set it up this way as that initial announcement trailer did. Did you get that same feeling, John?
I think the only reason they put this trailer out is because of the 9-minute preview that they showed with some of the Hobbit openings. I think they felt like they had to do more than just the teaser that was out there. I think they should have waited maybe until after the year started and then do a longer trailer, maybe even a little more than what they gave us here. Let the speculation build up. I think you're right. There was so much secrecy.
I think all the momentum went with the announcement. And by the time the announcement came out, everybody was stoked. Everybody had the information they wanted. And then this really didn't give anybody any more. And it just kind of fizzled. I thought it was... I think this trailer doesn't carry the momentum that first teaser had, that the first announcement teaser had.
Although there are two things that stand out in this trailer to me. One is I further believe that this is a con episode. And I think the Kirk getting his crew killed is a red herring, because it says that, then in it shows like a bay with all these, it looks like coffins or, you know, caskets perhaps. I think those are the cryogenic chambers with Khan's crew. And I think it's just a red herring to make it sound like it's Kirk getting his crew killed and maybe they go back in time and undo the killing or whatever. No, I think it's Khan's crew in those chambers. The other thing, is there some viral marketing being hidden in here? There's the scene where Cumberbatch's character is behind it looks like he's in a cell. And in one of the screens on the lower right side of the cell, if you freeze the frame at the right time, there is a website that you can go to, which is www.ruthe1701.com, which the 1701, of course, is the Enterprise, the NCC-1701. One of the 13 original ships launched from... Anyway, that's going a little too deep.
Red alert, we're going into deep into Trek geek territory here.
Yes, my friends, we had the technical manuals and we used to read that. I had the original Star Trek models that they re-released, I think, in the 80s. A really nice little Star Trek model of the original Constitution class ship. It came with decals for the 13, was it 13 or 12? But the original ships, you could name each of them and number them separately to be all of the different ships. But I'm waiting to hear back from that website. There's nothing there yet.
I signed up for it too. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I went ahead and I all you have at the website is a sign up form. So I'm guessing some kind of upcoming viral campaign will start, where you will start getting messages and information referring to the story and the movie. Yeah, those are good points that you make, John. I mean, to me, I've always said that if this is going to be a con story, it's going to be a reimagining of Space Seed, which was the original episode, not so much a reimagining of The Wrath of Khan. Now, we still keep getting this sense of Cumberbatch's character coming back for revenge. Who is he seeking revenge against? For what? Is it tied to the Khan thing? And in Wrath of Khan, it made sense because you had all that history with the characters. And it was many years later when Star Trek II came out after the events of the original series episode. This time around, I don't know. I mean, are they going to give us some kind of a prequel scene? Maybe a scene of something that happened in Kirk's past that then comes to haunt him with this new character? Is he seeking vengeance, not necessarily against Kirk specifically, but maybe against the Federation or who knows what? So... Well, the speculation will continue, and I'm sure if, like myself and like John, you go to RUthe1701. Is it RUthe1701.com? Is that the website?
RUthe1701.com, yeah.
Yeah, and sign up there. Hopefully there you will get some additional information on that.
Now, the other thing, too...
But, to be honest, Yeah, go ahead, John.
We also still don't know anything about Peter Weller in this, and I could easily see him being Khan... maybe even killed off really early, perhaps. And that's why Cumberbatch wants revenge. Who knows? But I could easily see him being Khan.
Yeah, there is some speculation there that that's actually the twist, that it is a revenge story along the lines of Khan, but that somehow in this new timeline, Khan is stopped earlier than he ever is in the original timeline. and that Peter Weller is the one playing that character, and that the character that Cumberbatch is playing, it must be a follower of Khan's that is then seeking revenge. He also has that line at the end of the trailer where he says, "What would you do for your family?" It seems to be asking Kirk, "Well, how far will you go to protect your family?" So if we're to assume that maybe he is a member of Khan's group, then, you know, he would consider Khan a father figure or something like that. So it would be, it would make sense in that context.
And you know the Wrath of Khan movie pretty well, right?
Yeah.
So, isn't there at one point where Kirk says, "I should have killed you when I had the chance," or "I should have killed him when I had the chance"?
Man, I can't remember that specifically right now. I don't recall there being such a scene, but I don't want to say I do remember that because I can't. But we'll have to go check out Wrath of Khan and see if he actually did say that, "I should have killed him when I had the chance," kind of thing. All right.
Oh, one more thing about this movie. Abrams seems to have a thing about people leaping off of things.
Lots of skydiving.
A lot. And looking back into the other movie, the first one, of course, you've got the mining rig and them jumping down there. So what is it about Abrams wanting to have people leap from tall bounds?
I don't know. And hopefully in many of those leaps, there's going to be some kind of a transporter beam picking them up before they fall. Because otherwise, in many of those scenes, they're not wearing parachutes or anything. So they're going to be in a lot of pain if they don't get rescued. So they better be locking in with transporters to help them out. So, all right, time to choose.
You must choose. But choose wisely.
Where are you at, John? What do you think?
Well, I know I'm going to go see Star Trek. I'm not going to count that one. That's a no-brainer. Holy crap. You know, I enjoyed watching all of these trailers and getting ready for the show, but there isn't... God, I guess out of all of these, maybe, strangely enough, it's between The Sorcerer and A Glimpse Inside the Mind, and I think Bill Murray would be enough to pull me into the movie. I would go see A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III.
Yeah. For me, it's that one or Pain and Gain. I'm surprised that not more people have liked that trailer. I don't know. You know what I was thinking too? The trailer reminded me a little bit of Tony Scott's True Romance, and that's another kind of underappreciated Tarantino movie that I've always liked, and it kind of had a vibe from that too. And that's why I liked it. So for me, it would be either...
Is that the Christian Slater?
That's the Christian Slater one that Tarantino wrote but didn't direct. Tony Scott directed it, but he wrote it. Tarantino wrote it. And so maybe there's a little bit of that in the Pain and Gain trailer that kind of spoke to me. But yeah, I think of these movies, the one that most interests me is the Charles Swan III, just because it had that West vibe feel to it. I love Bill Murray in this type of character. And... who knows? Maybe, you know, I kind of like the fact that Charlie Sheen is maybe trying to reinvent his career by doing something a little bit off the beaten path. So this would be something for me to check out. We do have a little bit of feedback from our good friend John Maloney in regards to those summer blockbusters that Barb and I took a look at the other day. He says that he's really looking forward to Pacific Rim, that the trailer looks great, and I can't resist a good or amusingly bad giant monster movie. However, I'm not sure if I like the use of the GLaDOS voice. We commented that the GLaDOS voice, which is the voice of the game Portal, is used in the film. I love the Portal games and I can appreciate it from a fan perspective, but it kind of makes it feel like it takes place in the Portal universe. That having been said, I'm sure the movie will be a blast. Love the show. You agree, John? Did you like having the use of that? You're the one who introduced me to Portal, so I found it kind of amusing, and I didn't seem to mind it as much as John did here. Would it turn you off to have the GLaDOS voice be used repeatedly in the film?
I can see where John's coming from, John Maloney is, on this. However, I think that for people who have no idea, will say, "Oh, hey, it's a kind of a quirky computer voice." So it'll be fine for people who don't know. And then I think, honestly, for people who do know, for the most part, I think they're going to see it as that fan service, like you say, and that it's just a nod. Although, honestly, I like the idea of where you're going with this, John. If you put this in the Portal universe, because the Portal is so unique to what it is and it's so isolated, you could stick this in the Portal universe and have a movie with Portal as well. And I'm okay with that.
Well, you know what? They did explain in the trailer that the monsters didn't come from outer space, but that they came from a dimensional portal in the crux of the Earth. Maybe it was a portal experiment gone wrong that opens a conduit into another universe, and these monsters start pouring into the Earth through that. So maybe the connection to Portal
is
even tighter.
It's science's fault.
Yeah, it's even tighter than we really think. That would be an interesting twist there to bring in
Black Mesa for all the crap that's gone down and aliens coming through portals, but it's not them who did it this time. It's Aperture. I get it.
It's Aperture. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Although, I must say that if the voice of GLaDOS had sounded more like this... Is this
love? I was waiting for it.
I think John Maloney would have appreciated it even more. So I'm going to leave it at that. John, we're not going to be back until next year. So any New Year's resolutions for you this year coming up?
New Year's resolutions. I hate those things.
My New Year's resolution is to try to do a better job of getting our episodes out on schedule. So apologies again for getting this one out a little bit late. But we'll do our best next year when we bring you more trailers and more irreverence here on Trailer Clash. And to you and to all of yours,
more
please have a wonderful and safe holiday season. More Whitesnake, and have a happy new year. Remember that our announcer is Mr. Scott Fletcher. You can find him over at voice.carolworks.com. Our theme music is by Goose, and it is used with permission. You can find them at goosemusic.com. Our website is trailerclash.com. Our Gmail address is trailerclash@gmail.com, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/trailerclash. Please leave us some feedback over on iTunes or Stitcher. You can find us there under Trailer Clash, the movie trailers podcast. And you can find information on my other online ventures at robertosuarez.me. Lastly, give us a call if you want to leave us a voicemail. The number is 503-897-0825. Like I said earlier, to you and all, have a wonderful holiday. Have a great and happy beginning to the new year. Have lots of merriment with your family and with friends. And don't forget, whether it's 2012 or 2013, please be safe and stay clashy.
Have a clashy new year.